Well, I have been a pastor for almost 30 years. And I will gladly tell you that when I first meet people, I've learned not to tell them that I'm a pastor. Now, that may seem odd, as that's my profession, but over the years, I have come to realize that I need to be prepared for a variety of responses. When I am asked what I do for a living, I usually say that I work for a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You see, when people say or hear the word pastor, or that I work for a church, you know, people get weird. It's true. They begin to act differently, or they say they're not religious, or they share some horror stories of past experiences, or they tell me convincingly that they are a good person and they don't need God, or suddenly they start to apologize for swearing. Yep, that's true. Or sadly, they unleash their anger on me. I have experienced it all. So I get to know people a little bit before I share with them what I do. People seem to think that they'll be punished for their waywardness, or any proximity to me somehow reinforces how damned they are. Or all of a sudden they become sweet and proper and change how they behave, as if some reward is going to befall them as I'm somehow closer to God. I have even had a stranger ask me to touch and bless his lotto ticket. True story. I don't think he won, though, because I never heard from him again. So I got my nose pierced about 17 years ago, and as I sat in the chair of this burly dude named Paul, he asked me what I did. Silly me. I told him. Well, he unleashed on me a barrage of anger that he had held on to for years. His seething, raw energy and loathing hatred for God, the church, and anyone who worked for them was extremely overwhelming. This guy was holding a giant needle in his hand, making his way towards my face. I thought I was terrified before, but now I was petrified. Well, I'm simply a person, and people react this way. Imagine what God himself goes through. I venture to say that we're no different when it comes to God. God isn't surprised by our shame or repelled by it. He's not put off by our responses or attitudes or the words that we might even have towards him. Instead, he uses this as an opportunity to welcome us home. And that's what we're going to jump into this morning, a window into the heart of God. Now, it's a story that we're probably most familiar with, and even outside Christian circles, it's one society will even mention from time to time, the story of the prodigal son, the wayward son who came home. In fact, our current series in Luke is called Coming Home to God. This parable has many nuances and layers to it. And today, I want to guide us through this story and see what it really means for our lives today. Taking it a step further, I actually want us to look and discover the prodigal father in a new way and to understand how the father meets both of his children in ways that are deeply meaningful. So I'm going to paraphrase a bit of this story, but it comes to us from Luke chapter 15. So there was a father who had two sons. The younger one, eager for independence, demands his inheritance early, and verse 11 tells us, "Father, I want right now what's coming to me." So the father divided his property, and the son leaves for a foreign land. He squanders it on a life of extravagance and recklessness. He spent everything he had till he had nothing left. Famine soon swept the country, and he ended up working, feeding pigs, and wishing he could eat what the pigs were eating. Well, he realized his father's servants were actually being cared for better than he was. So he decides to return to his father, asking to be treated as a servant. So he started to rehearse what it is he was going to say to his dad upon his return. Starting in verse 20, it says, "When he was still a long way off, the father saw him. His heart pounding, he ran out and embraced him and kissed him. The son started his speech, 'Father, I've sinned against God and I've sinned before you, but I don't deserve to be called your son ever again.' But the father wasn't even listening. He got so excited, he called his servants to help throw a huge party for his son who had come home. Well, the older son was so jealous and refused to share in the celebration. He was angry, telling his father he had been here the whole time. He was faithful and never once did he get a party. Yet here he comes, my brother, after throwing away all your money, he shows up and you go out and have a huge feast for him. Well, his father said, son, you don't understand. You've been with me the whole time and everything that is mine is yours. We had to celebrate. This brother of yours was dead and he's alive. He was lost and he's been found. So it begs the question, why does Jesus even tell this parable? The religious leaders were grumbling. You see, they didn't like that Jesus was spending time with sinners, the undeserving of society. I love how Lutheran priest Nadia Boltz-Weber puts it. She summarizes it this way as to why Jesus is telling the story and what's happening. She says, now all the bad people, the ones who deserve to be punished, were coming near to listen to Jesus. And the good people, who deserve to be rewarded, were grumbling and saying, this fellow welcomes the bad people. And rather than punishing them for being bad, he totally just takes them out to dinner instead. I think that's a good deal. Well, I think it's natural for you and I to lean into reward and punishment perspectives in life. Perhaps we are no different than the religious leaders of Jesus' time. Why is he taking them out for dinner? Why is he spending his time with those people who don't even deserve to be treated so well? Well, that's exactly the point. That's what grace and mercy are. Extended without reservation, freely given, and often hard to receive. You know, as Jesus starts this story, it's important to know what the original listeners actually would have heard, because they were shocked by such a request. To demand your inheritance while your father was still alive was equal to wishing that your father was dead. This did not sit well with people. It was an appalling request by the son. And yet, the father gave him what he did and sent him on his way. So first, let's look at the younger son. He clearly wanted something more in life, and he felt that he had a right to do as he wanted. I'm sure we can all relate in some way to this. Our selfish independence at times can launch us headfirst into what we think is best, only for things to end in disarray. Well, the prodigal son was reckless, he was demanding, he was entitled and selfish, only for things to end in shame, embarrassment, and him feeling all alone. He went from riches to rags, from prestige to the lowly existence of shoveling slop for pigs. There we go, I said it wrong. What a life. Perhaps you already know this, but the word prodigal means spending money or resources freely and recklessly, wastefully extravagant. So in this story, we see that the son was reckless with his inheritance, wasteful, and he spent all of his inheritance. It was gone. The wealth was gone. You know, I appreciate how Henry Nouwen, a known theologian, puts it, and I think maybe we can relate. He said, I am the prodigal son. Every time I search for unconditional love where it cannot be found. We do that. We search for things often in the wrong places. You see, the son wasted everything on his temporary pleasures, on drink and promiscuity, and now he is broke, he is starving, he's in a foreign land feeding pigs. What a life. His only recourse was now to go back to his father's house. Would he even take me back? Would he cast me off? Is he going to reject me? You see, the son expected punishment and would humble himself to be a servant, unworthy of even being called his father's son, due to his wayward and selfish actions and choices. So he plots to return. Mostly, I think, because he was hungry. We're not actually told in the text that he was sorry. The text doesn't say that, but we do know that he was rehearsing what it is he wanted to say to his father when he got back to be a servant in his household. So what happens next is actually unexpected and even scandalous. The father was broken and longing. He was desperate for his child to return, full of love despite the pain of rejection. Now, he had the right as a father to feel betrayed and even angry with his son's wasteful living and selfish indulgences, to be ready with a lecture if his son should ever come home. How many parents in the room, you know, your kid's been out and you got a lecture already for when they walk in the door? I've been there. Well, scripture tells us that his son was in the distance and he saw him. And he was so excited, he ran to him. In fact, he didn't even let his son get his excuses out. He didn't even listen to what he had to say. Instead, he called his servants to clothe his son and to get ready to have a huge feast and throw a party for him. John Chardy is a known American poet, and he says, "Every parent is at some time the father of the unreturned prodigal, with nothing to do but keep his house open to hope." I think this is such a beautiful picture of the heart of the father. You see, the father doesn't wait for his son to come crawling back to him to apologize. The father doesn't even wait to see if he's changed his ways or even to hear the excuses of his son. He doesn't wait to see if he's now a good person, but rather the father embraces him and showers him with compassion and love, so much so that he goes to throw a party for him. Now, earlier I gave the definition of prodigal, but it also means having or giving something on a lavish scale. You see, the father could also be called the prodigal father. He lavished on a grand scale a party for his son who had returned. See, there was no punishment for his wayward actions or choices. Rather, he was met with compassion and love. Our posture matters. God wants to see us turn towards him. The son, no doubt, he really messed up. But rather than being met with condemnation, he's met with compassion and love, with joy that he had returned home. I want you to hear this morning. God's love is not dependent on our faithfulness. His love is unconditional. That can be really hard for us to accept, because you and I are so conditioned to expect reward and punishment that we miss the real gift of freedom that is given to us, offered so generously from the Father. 1 John 3, verse 1 says this: "What marvelous love the Father has extended to us. Just look at it. We are called children of God. That's who we really are. That's amazing." But you and I so often don't grasp the significance and the weight of what that really means. Sometimes I think we forget that we are God's children, that we're his beloved, and that he's just simply waiting for us to return home. So being a parent is by far one of the most vulnerable aspects of life. And I know some of you aren't parents yet, and that's okay, but I think you can still find yourself in this. When you bring this little person into the world, you suddenly have your heart living outside of you. Now, as a parent, I can tell you there are times when my heart has been shattered at the pain that my children have faced. During times of uncertainty and them working to figure life out, the cost for me as a parent has sometimes come with sleepless nights, with tears that maybe seem to never run dry,
With a heartache, I often don't even have words how to communicate. But I will tell you that there is no greater relief as a parent than when you know your child is safe and when they are home and they are near. It's a beautiful thing. Well, it's no different with God. You see, we are his kids. We're his children. His vulnerability in allowing us to make a mess of our lives, of him watching us in wayward situations and moments, of us choosing to live recklessly, all of it impacts his heart. But hear this, it does not change his love for us, ever. God is not an angry and punishing God. In fact, God is revealed to us through Jesus' life and ministry. Jesus was the one who sat with sinners. He hung out with tax collectors. He spent time with the marginalized people of society. And this made religious leaders angry. Why? Because Jesus did not discriminate his love towards others. Henry Nouwen, in his book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, says this, "As a child of God, I still live as though the God to whom I'm returning demands an explanation. While walking home, I keep entertaining doubts about whether I will be truly welcomed when I get there. As I look at my spiritual journey, I see how full it is of guilt about the past and worries about the future. I realize my failures and know that I have lost the dignity of my sonship. But I am not yet able to fully believe that where my failings are great, grace is always greater. Still, clinging to my sense of worthlessness, I project for myself a place far below that which belongs to the Son." You see, God welcomes us back, always. And we need to be reminded of whose we are and that coming home to him is not a journey in shame, but a journey in love extended freely. And that's not easy. So now there's another side to this story. And some of us here may find we relate a little bit more to the older brother who didn't rejoice with the family. In fact, he removed himself from the celebration. He was resentful, he was angry, and he was jealous. Why does my brother deserve all this? Well, maybe in our lives there's someone that we're jealous of, who has received something good, and yet we think we should have received that. We're sitting there feeling slighted because someone else got the promotion or not us, or someone else got the internship, but you know it was yours. Maybe we're sitting here feeling slighted because things that we felt we deserved have not come our way, the recognition that we so desired to have. Well, the older brother stayed loyal to his father. He stayed back and he took care of things. Now, he wasn't perfect either. His blind loyalty ended up turning to resentment and anger. He says, "Why? Why does my younger brother get a party simply for coming home after he squandered the wealth and he disgraced our family?" Well, he believed that his obedience should earn him favor. He, too, didn't trust his father's love. He felt that he had to earn it. Now, the older son, by all standards, was the good boy, the one who tried to do everything right. So when his dad throws this crazy party for his younger brother, he's angered. But the father doesn't forget him. And though his son is angered, the father says to him, "Hey, everything I have is yours. You get it all. What do you have to be angry about? It's not a portion you get. You get everything." Even in his anger, the older son was still receiving extravagance from the father, showing him that everything he had was his possessions, his love, his compassion are offered just as freely to the older son. Now, in the same way, God turns to us and he says, hey, everything I have is yours. My love, my compassion, my forgiveness, my joy, and my delight in you. Nadia Boltz-Weber says this, and I love this. I want to sit with this for a second. She says, the tragic thing about this story isn't that one was selfish and that one was resentful. The tragic thing is that neither of them trusted the love of the Father. And when that love is not trusted as being sufficient, you know what we do? We replace it with punishment and reward system. I don't always trust that I am loved by God or worthy of that love. I need someone to tell me. We all do, because we are forgetful people. I wonder how many of us struggle to trust that true love of the Father in our lives. You know, we're all making our way somewhere, and for some of us, our journey is tumultuous. The ups and downs of life lead us to places of isolation and despair, sometimes of great success or even failure. We look for accolades, or maybe we've even found ourselves in places of destitution. We can often be misguided by our own ambitions or by loyalties that stand in our way of accessing the true grace and love of God. I guess what we most likely struggle with is the idea that God is somehow mad at us and we're deserving of some kind of punishment. The Father is actually saying, hey, you're loved. You are mine. And when you turn to me, I'm welcoming you and loving you unconditionally, and I'm going to embrace you with grace and mercy. This is sometimes hard for us to accept. Many of you know that I used to teach in India, and one of my students came to us from a Muslim background. He had come to faith, and he changed his name. So to protect his identity, I'm going to call him Mark. Well, Mark's family was angered by his decision to follow Christ, and his father actually set out to have him killed. After several attempts, Mark knew it was not safe for him to stay in that state, so he moved far away, escaping the wrath of his father. He knew that this decision was going to cost him everything. To follow Christ cost him his entire family, friends, community, everything. But Mark had not come to fully understand the grace and mercy of God yet in his life. He felt he owed God penance for his life and his choices. I sat with him one day to ask him why he was repeatedly late for class, and I did not expect what happened next. Mark told me he lived in a little shed on someone's property. There was no electricity, and he would sit up through the night by candlelight reading his Bible. But feeling unworthy of God's grace and love, he felt he owed God penance of some kind, that God was mad at him. So he would carefully draw blood from his arm, and in his notebook, he was writing out the entire New Testament in his blood. I was horrified to see the scars on his arms and to hear his story. I wept, and I called in a colleague who could help me translate with certainty to make sure these words were clear. I wanted to share with Mark about the grace and the mercy of God, that this gift of love was free, that under no circumstances was there anything he could do that would alter God's love for him, that there was no need for him to engage in this behavior, and that Jesus was delighted in him just as he was. You can imagine the mental turmoil in his life trying to trust a Father who extends freely love and grace after he experienced an earthly father who attempted twice to kill him. I've never forgotten that encounter with Mark, and while it may be extreme, I wonder how many of us do this in our own lives. We disqualify ourselves from God's love, of accepting the fullness of that love, and we do things to think that we can somehow gain his favor by our actions. You see, the son who lost everything did nothing but simply return. And the sheer joy and delight of the father was known by all, especially the son. The older son felt he was entitled to his anger and jealousy, and he missed out on the goodness because he felt slighted by his father, honoring one he felt was so undeserving. And that's the point. None of us are worthy because of what we do, have done, or are still to do. We are worthy simply because we are his children. Broken, wayward, dishonest, resentful, selfish, it seems to not compute. We are so undeserving. Weber says this, "When you wander far from the fold of God, or when you live in such a small way because you don't trust that you were loved and worthy to be loved, know this, that all the forgiveness and mercy and reconciliation of God is already yours. It will not be taken away as punishment, and it will not be granted as reward. It is yours no matter what. And when God sees you, God is filled with compassion." I think maybe some of us need to sit with that truth today, that you can't lose or earn God's love. Maybe you're like the younger son. You've made mistakes and you're carrying shame. You feel that God is only going to punish you if you come back to him. Truth is, he's just standing there waiting to run to you. All he wants is just you to turn towards him. God's waiting to embrace you, not to punish you. Or maybe you're like the older son, feeling resentful and jealous. Perhaps you need to ask yourself this morning if you really trust God's love, or are you feeling like you need to work hard to earn it? We each need to be reminded of God's unconditional love, to be reminded daily that our life is in fact his, that we are his. All we need to do is simply turn to him, and you and I will be met with open arms from the Father who says, "I'm so glad you're here. I'm so happy you've come home. I'm so glad that you've been found." You know, my heart has broken for many of the people I've met in my life, be it their anger at God or the church, or be it in their guilt and shame to convince me they're actually a good person, like Paul, who unleashed his pent-up anger at me with a needle in hand. I found compassion for him, and my heart broke. You know, he may have very well been justified in his rage, but what he missed was understanding the grace and mercy of a loving God who is not defined by the actions of mere humans. We are all wayward at some point. And you and I'm pretty sure, are good at rehearsing our narrative to present to God, hoping we can convince him somehow to take us back. Or we stand in contrast and shake our heads at the extravagant love offered to those you and I look at and think they're so selfish. They don't deserve that. At either end of the spectrum, we are all welcomed into the extravagant love of the prodigal father who lavishes his love and compassion on us, his children. I want you to hear this morning. God is not mad at you. God is not mad at you. No matter how far you wander, you are loved. You were wanted and you were always welcome home. You need to stop running. You need to stop trying to earn his love and simply turn towards him. He's not keeping score. He's simply waiting to welcome you home. I'm going to lead us into communion, and I'm going to call the worship team up if you could come. And I know I've run a little late, so thank you for that grace. But I want to ask us this morning, because we've all been wayward. We've all had times in our lives that we feel that we're undeserving of God's grace and mercy and love. And yet we come to the communion table with a full recognition that it's because of what Christ did for us that we are forgiven, that we have the ability to come before him. And sometimes we come lugging our shame and our guilt, and we come lugging the stuff of our lives that we think make us so unworthy of standing in his presence. But I want to tell you this morning, God is not mad at you. And I'm going to lead us in a time of prayer, and then I'm going to ask you to come and partake of communion. And this is a time where we pause to reflect on the gift that's been given to us through the sacrifice. These are symbols. The wafer is on the top, and the juice represents his blood that was shed for us. But here's what I want to ask you this morning before you take communion. I want you to sit and ask yourself, what is God saying to me today? What is God saying to me? Maybe he wants to remind you that you're worthy, that you don't have to earn his love. Maybe he's saying to you this morning, I need you to take your anger and hostility and throw it to the side and just come sit with me for a bit. Snuggle up beside me and just let's find some freedom together. Maybe God's saying to you this morning, you think you screwed up bad? You think you messed it all up? You think I don't already know and see it all? Guess what? Just come. Just turn to me. Because the Father is waiting to run to you. He's not waiting for your excuses. He's not waiting for you to figure it out. He's not going, we'll see what happens this time. He's like, oh my goodness, there's my child. And he's so excited. He wants to run to you today. And so I'm going to lead us in prayer. And then I'm going to dismiss you row by row. You can come to the sides, and then you come back up the middle to your row. But I want you to honestly ask God what he's saying to you today. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that you are standing and waiting for us. That you aren't looking for our excuses. That you aren't looking for some penance that we owe you. But you're waiting with hope, looking out for us, your children, asking us just to turn, and one glimpse of our hearts towards you makes you run towards us with love and compassion, with grace and with mercy. And so I pray this morning that we would ask ourselves, God, what are you saying to me? Are you asking me to turn to you? Are you telling me to leave the excuses behind? God, are you asking me to let go of the anger I'm holding on to? We can struggle with this, learning to accept the love of God. So would you help us this morning as we come to the table of communion to understand the power of the gift that we have been freely given, to know that we are loved by a God who calls us his own, and that your heart towards us is simply to love us and to embrace us and to cherish us as your children. So whether we find ourselves as the wayward son or the hostile, angered son, may our posture turn towards you and understand the grace of a loving God who calls us his own. Father, what do you want to say to us today? Open our ears to hear. Open our hearts to have a posture to turn towards you, to know love, compassion. We pray these things in your name. Amen.